Adam, and Steve and John have given us the opportunity. I would like to learn from the speakers along. One presentation after another would be a bit time conscious. If I'm correct, 10 minutes each. 10 minutes each.
Maybe just if might be needed. It's not sufficient to simply offer free basic electricity and they say, okay, now we've dealt with poor and now we can rack up the tariff in order to get money to do infrastructure development. It's not, from our perspective, it's not going to fly. And just to illustrate the example, the way that low-income households are using energy is the equivalent of someone else on an income of 20,000 a month spending 4,000 a month on electricity. And I think we also have to look at the quality of the connections, and I think someone yesterday raised this, is with 50 kilowatt hours a month, you can't sort of have the fridge be cooking and then decide making up a cup of tea because you're going to strip the cover. So, in a sense, we are, at the moment, we have a two-tier system. And given that we are one of the most unequal countries in the world, do we want to continue that two-tier system? Or should we not be providing a decent quality system that the people can build on? You know, it's a similar thing in a house where we provide houses with no ceiling, and then we expect the inhabitants to actually pay for the cost of heating those houses, even though they're anxious for the houses. So we just want to put that in the context, is that who are we actually doing this infrastructure for? Who are we revitalizing the systems for? And we believe it should be for the citizens of South Africa, all of them. And so really what we're wanting to say is we need to make that system, revitalize that system in a way that does not cause increasing hardship and increasing the connection for low-income households. And we're also seeing that if we look at customer base, the increasing tariffs already are leading to people disconnecting themselves. Or I do work in some of the rural Northern Cape areas where some people are in houses with electric stoves, but they never switch them on because there's no money to propose that also, I guess it's staying obvious if you increase the tariff, you have that ripple effect through the economy, which means you can have less income for low income customers, and if they take themselves off the goods, it means that you have an authority as their customers to actually recover that as well as their revenue. This was just want to highlight a couple of things here. This was a study done in 2010. And simply saying, look at the rural elections you've had in 2003 2009, and look at the urban. These are a couple of categories. Now, you'll see that rural electricity is much higher than urban electricity. And that is a calculation done because in the rural, some of the tariffs in rural areas, it's worked on a network charge, where the prepaid is just paid per unit, and that network charge is incorporated. So if you are looking to a future where we're going to have a distribution system, and you'll pay a network charge, and then you will also then pay for your current separately. Then what is that network charge? What is that going to have an impact on the cost? And what you see there is a naked expression. I'm going to show you some examples later of work we did looking at alternatives. I'm also just highlighting that social grants, transport grants, as an indication of the state funds that are being put into society in order to enable people to have basic life or money life in order to have buy basic services. So on the one hand we are saying yes, electricity must rise so that we can maintain the system, cross-subsidize our services, and at the same time we've got poor people who are unable to afford those increases in development to have increases in social grants in order to pay for that. And so I'm quite illustrating that here, and I'm asking this very logical from a national government perspective. So we have Eskom, who needs to build an increased their infrastructure. So they get funding from Treasury, government grants. They build it, and they have a cost recovery system, so consumers government, please can we have increasing social options and the nation's prosperity. And then we have Eskom itself having guided its business and its work to making a profit and returning that to government. And one thing that has recently come up is that the state has opted not to collect, I don't know what the exact wording is, 8 billion rand. And that has meant that the electricity price is going up 16% to 25%, that I understand from the press. So that's quite a huge impact. And it's just, putting it out there, it's just a logical way of spending money, the spending of money. And is there maybe a smarter way to find funding to do infrastructure without going around the system? So we're leaving the electricity for an integrated approach. And we just want to reflect that when you have electricity, you have an impact on health because you have air pollution because people are using electricity instead of wood, kerosene, etc. You have good medical results because there's light at night that people can study, but there's an impact on education. You have an improved economic development because people are able to have small businesses which run more sharp, growing businesses, etc. So there are impacts when you improve the electricity service which ripple to other departments and should have positive impacts. So we're basically saying we should be integrating our approach to energy because it underpins everything else and should not be seen in a silo way. So, and then in terms of corporate intelligent finance, but this first bullet point is just an example of this aspect. But we're going into the 21st century. It's a very different world in terms of technology. In fact, prior to this, we were just saying, you know, 20, 30 years ago, or how old are these distribution systems? More than 45 years ago, didn't have computers. So we need to make sure that we're putting in place technology that's appropriate and not spending money on technology which is older, therefore, but cheaper, and then 10 years' time we've got to replace it all because things have moved. Rather, plan for the future now. And one of the things that is always right there is that these current prepaid meters, which are being rolled out mostly in low-income homes, cannot do the sort of prepaid connectivity allocations and the inclining block kind of stuff. So what we end up with is the poor who should be better are not benefiting. And we still continue to roll out these same current prepaid meters. So we should stop that. We should stop procuring more intelligent technology that can do what we want. And then I just wanted to give you an example, because if we put in energy efficiency, we use a more flexible approach, and we sort of looking at a modular approach, you know, lots of small generation, embedded generation, solar, renewables. And this is just a case study that's about to be published, is that if you bring in on the city of Cape Town an increase in renewable energy, you're suddenly potentially going to look at a 7% increase in price. But if you improve efficiency, then suddenly overall the price increases are going to be 0.2 cents. I'm sure there's plenty of people who can explain to that as to the exact details of why. But what struck me is it's an example of being intelligent and looking at an integrated system. We believe that that's what it should be. I think I'm going to go to the next slide and I'll come back to that. This is just a case study done 2009-2010. And this is looking at a whole range of small mini-grids. And we were focused on rural areas, and we were focused on Southern Africa, practical examples that are working. And it was done as preparation for inputting into the World Bank energy policy. And what we found was the solar home system, and I mean, you really don't have to look at the details, but just if you look at the cost which was put through there, the solar home system, if you want to use it on a single mobile home system, it seems to be much more expensive than if you have a mini grid. The rest are all mini grids. With Eskom rural rights at the bottom. So, and you can see that, yes, they're slightly more expensive, But if we remember over time, if you're looking at the combination of renewable energy, what with one or two having, say, diesel backup for the day that there isn't renewable solar. And if we look at going into the future, what you're going to find is conventional fuels are obviously going to be just simply on the basis of if it's non renewable, you have to keep digging it out of the ground, it's obviously going to get more and more expensive to run it off. Whereas renewable energy might be expensive on front, but they are on the fuel cost. And so in terms of going forward, we believe that the mini grid should be part of the solution. So we think it's almost a transformation or a revolution to start smart technology, as I say, small scale, modular approach, and having better generation, maybe mini grids in areas that don't have small rural villages. And then in terms of capital expenditure, we just think that we want to try and avoid driving people into more and more debt and poorer and poorer. So potentially it seems to us that we should have treasury drive the funding for the backlog. It would be not a way out idea. And if we look at the so-called return that Exxon wants to give the BP of 8 billion, then it seems that there should be that way for means of finding that funding. I'm not suggesting that that's going to be lying on doing nothing, but certainly it looks like it's ways to get funding. And then obviously we're not advocating that it should be a free for all, and we want to get their funding in terms of pay with no accountability at all. While we are suggesting that on the operation side, then one can work on cost recovery, and we're also wondering if it's worth exploring a standard charge rather than having different prices across the country depending on customer base. I mean, we heard yesterday about differences between local municipalities and Eskom in terms of the cost. And maybe we need a standard cost across the country with the sort of pop-up realization happening at a higher level. We also believe that the pre-base rate needs to increase from 50 to 100. I think we already have 100. But that's almost a temporary measure. And it needs to implement. Many places are not being implemented. Then in terms of the sort of governance issues in terms of financial accountability, institutional capacity, transparency, support accuracy, and then monthly evaluation and enforcement. The organisation I referenced is all part of the Electricity Governance Initiative in South Africa, which is a sort of coalition which works with the World Resources Institute. We look at different ways of how we can monitor governance in the electricity sector in different countries. There is a report that was done in 2009-2008, which is available if you would like, which looks specifically at the electricity sector in South Africa. And then just applying the governance to this issue, it seems that part of the financial accountability is a failure to spend, and we know that there's a not seem to have the teeth needed to compose the government. The lack of skills, I think, is not just around the education system, but maybe that partnership with the private sector of mentoring rather than just providing education. And then transparency, just better data is available. That is a survey. Do not distinguish, for example, whether you are getting electricity from backyard solar or whether you are doing electricity formally. There simply no whether you have the access to it or not. So there's a gap in our knowledge and information base. We definitely need to be coordinating enough. We need to be some sort of task team, and we believe it needs to be broader than just government. It needs to include some of the social stakeholders. And I just wanted to give you one small example that in electrification of informal areas, apparently there's a group that says that if anybody dies because of electrification issues in an informal area, there's a CEO of the city's electrical department or some such official is now liable. And so if I understand Italy, it's pretty with great resistance to actually electrify informal households because of liability issues. In Canada, apparently, they work with three committees in order to look at the safety issues and were able to do it. Now, this is anecdotal, told to me by someone who works in this area, but certainly it seems there needs to be some intervention there, if that's the case. And then in terms of enforcement, I believe that Parliament has a role to play. That it's up to Parliament to oversight to ensure that there is integration and that actually we are making progress through it. So then I've put a list of, for summarizing these recommendations. I certainly believe that if we need to amend legislation in order to say that you can have the license taken away if you're not compliant, then that should happen. But at the same time, I think that might be practically impossible because what actually happens is not going to grow with you, which you'll get time when you were told. You know, it doesn't seem to be practical. The other thing is in terms of embedded generation, I know there's some pilot projects today that's got a sort of 9 man a day wheeling chart, I think it is. So if you want to put cars into the grid and you're paid to use the network of a certain amount, and the CFK probably tell us more about that. But we need to, maybe initially at least, we need to identify and encourage people who are generating into the network. And if you put up huge network charges, people will do it, but they won't tell you. And if the system being pumped isn't sophisticated enough to let you know where electricity is coming in the car, then you've got a list of some sort of person working online thinking they switched it off from the ESCOM end and then getting zapped by someone else's house that actually got the electricity into the grid. Because those old meters go back and forth. So, we just think we need to start moving on this and be proactive about it. It seems alarming that we don't have good data. And that certainly it should be central. And we would say it should be transparently available so that all different departments and other sectors, people can use it. We would suggest that this budget coming up, that maybe the Parliament work on ensuring that there is specific distribution infrastructure budgeted in the project going forward. And I think that's more or less. Yeah. And thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Dave. Shall I say important to Mr. Rana? I think we can move to the time. But the link with your reading contract. Big content, big things are for this. Very good pieces and angles. I'm sure we'll take note of some things that you just said. Or remember, the energy has to be that open. While the energy has to be that open, that's the idea. Glances the people and so that there's some articles that talk about municipality, both for EFCOM. Now, as far as I know, the only thought that advocacy actually brought the general feeling of municipality and it's only today that Salga is going to be saying things on behalf of the body of municipalities. So it's just a comment, it's rather alarming that the newspaper is already running, municipalities, because not to say municipalities, we need the majority of them or all of them, are a control, which is not the case. And I want to put this character, I call it like, that's not the case. We're all here on the numbers and everything in the background. In any case, that's what I could speak. Lula, over to you. Welcome, Ali.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Thank you both for your committee for your great interest And
devişim yasak, 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 yasak. The biggest issue I opened the joke of presentation this book takes with is on the issue of IAS management, because I'd like to talk about a couple of crucial things. On the issue of revenue management, and how municipalities are using revenue, the issue of surcharges and subsidies, which I think is a critically important thing, which will see with the results. And that affects obviously affordability of pricing and ongoing viability for municipal infrastructure itself. It is clear, and we've seen this often, that electricity revenue is not only used to meet the cost of electricity, but also subsidizes the number of non-electricity landowners. The crucial issue that we see is that there is no commonly agreed cost effective or aligned tariff methodology that is applied by all municipalities. With a high level of non-tax losses, which are paid in the industry, which affect revenue collection, and therefore the ability to be able to invest in the infrastructure, but it also creates a tariff distortion, because we punish people who do that, and I think that's the problem. The issue of clean invoicing and debtor management is critical. And the biggest issue is the issue of metering and making sure that, that the losses that or the energy that's consumed is accurately accounted for. And I think that is the problem. For the last couple of months, EIG has undertaken a significant deep dive analysis of municipal tariffs to look at a couple of things. How do municipal tariffs relate to what NERSA has agreed about them? How does those tariffs compare to Eskom? So what you'll see is inside of our apology is a little bit of an eye test, but here we are with full study by the fuel committee.
Lee, what are the things that come up currently? So any piece of information that is helpful for us to get from the piece of the would welcome.
So what you can see is that the red line represents what Eskom would charge an equivalent customer profile. The far left would be the Eskom tariff, which is broken down into your energy charges, your mine charges, and the various levels of cost of insurance payments. What you can see, there are a few municipalities that are very close to what the municipal charges that are in terms of their NERSA-approved tariff, and a few of those, a few of the municipalities are significantly more, particularly right on them, on the far right, which is Tokay, which is significantly higher, and obviously 30 power is significantly higher. But this doesn't really tell the true story, because what it does is only obviously the tariff methodology that NERSA approved. What it doesn't address, obviously, the differentiation between the additional surcharges that municipalities then put on. If we look at municipal margins, purely on energy, in other words, what they pay to Eskom and what they're on charge to their consumers, just on energy, you can see that the range is from negative 26, in other words, Civic 20 charge the low Eskom rate for energy, and if they have a markup of around 41% of the energy charge to Eskom charge. That's what 2010 and 2011. If we look at NERSA's application, probably the surcharge over and above the energy that they've got from Eskom is about 62% margin. The range between 20% and 41%. Now, there are questions around, for example, why are municipalities like Eskom Green and Civic 20 able to offer such deep discounts for the energy charges compared to what Eskom charges? And this is where the rub comes in. If we look at the demand charge, in other words, the fixed charge that municipalities ask customers to pay before they use a single unit of electricity, the markup at the lowest level are 25% to over 700% markup over demand charge. Now that is significant. The ability for a customer to put solar panels on their roof is zero. There is no return, because irrespective of where you use the electricity network or not, you will pay significant demand charges. And this right here is a significant issue, because these are the charges that are not regulated by higher finance. And this is where we see a significant fall in energy charges. In other words, it looks very well that the municipalities are within a NERSA degree tariff, but they're lowering the demand charges, which is a significant impact. We cannot see residential generation at these margins. This is a transport. What the indicator is that the falling demand for electricity because of rising prices means the municipalities have to find other ways to find revenue to cut that bill, and they're loading our country off the demand charges. So the issue of surcharges is crucial, because there is no framework which governs what surcharges can be put in place by a municipality. And I think
have, when we consider both the kind of changing characters and changing the way in which electricity is demanded and produced, particularly in the residential area, which we cannot hope to see solar panels being adopted in the country, there is just no return to the average customer. They can't afford it. You know, they might use the energy charges, but they will pick up massive surcharges on demand. So there is no return, and I think that is a significant issue that needs to be addressed. These surcharges are being used, actually, supplement revenue shortfall, and that's what seems increasing inconsistency between the management and management. But the next stage of the study we're undertaking is to actually look at the degree of cross-subsidy that these subsidy charges are adding to municipal revenue. And this is also why we see a number of smaller organizations, small smelters and light manufacturers actually approaching these energy things. These can help us get rid of the municipality of our supplier, and how do we get that to become our supplier? Because these municipal surcharges are not a part of the customer. So there is a distortion of competition, which needs to make small, medium enterprises completely uncompetitive. And I think that is a significant issue that we have. If we are going to create employment in those areas, small and medium enterprises are crucially important in that. And then those small, medium enterprises cannot act electricity connection because the infrastructure isn't there to support them, or they don't have the volume. So it's important if municipalities are going to encourage growth in their environment that they have. And further, which is related to inequitable tariffs. One of the challenges we've seen with this is the first question that comes up is from our members is, please can you tell us which municipality is charging the least so we can actually move our business there? And I suppose while that's a call for competition between municipalities, I don't think it's positive for the people who live within those municipalities. Because as the municipal demand shifts from industrial, commercial, light industrial, to pure residential, we also see a spike in tariffs. Because those heavy industries provide the bulk of the use and the bulk of the money across which the subsidies can then flow to the growing industry. So we have a double whammy. You have a lot of jobs in the municipalities because the industry needs. You then have a double whammy of those poorer people having to pick up greater electricity increases because their subsidies have gone. So equitable tariffs is a significant problem that has to be addressed across the municipalities. I think the biggest issue we then have with the policy of tariffs going forward, the continued financial viability of those municipalities put at risk that demand disappears. Because there is such a degree of subsidization of electricity provided, the destruction of the electricity demand in those areas has a significant impact on municipal finance. The ability to provide water, roads, other services is significant. So the issue of inequality and the focus of this needs to be on understanding that there is an importance to growing the customer base in those areas is significant. On the issue of government processes, I think there are very some confusions on three of the issues over the year. The issue of relates to how does the power of MRSA relate to constitutional competencies of the municipality to particular electricity. I think that is the most vital issue that has to be addressed before any discussion can be undertaken regarding the restructuring of the EI. I think we saw that with the original EI holdings process. That despite many years of good work and effort being put in, they've come down to the issue of what is the constitutional power of the social community. So I think that is a fundamental issue that has to be addressed before any discussion on restructuring can go forward. The other crucial thing is that there is a perception, particularly among users within the municipality, that they often not to simply ignore the emergency room. And the challenge we had when taking this then was MRSA itself doesn't have accurate data on the municipal tax. And if they do, it's not in a format which can be interrogated. It's PDF documents or Word documents. So there's no hardcore data analytics that can exist for MRSA to be able to make accurate determinations on those routes. So I think the issue of capacitation data is significantly important. The other issue is that money that should be earmarked as free basic electricity is being applied off it, and we've seen that so far, and we have supplements that study which would be the actual pattern. I think the issue of monitoring compliance and the importance of those regimes is critically important. We cannot discuss the traction of the economy of the industry without making sure that those issues of monitoring compliance and enforcement are put in place with, otherwise it's the same situation. And the issue right now, although it feels as a significant issue related to the state of the finding, the issue of science. I think it's no use saying rule that you're growing grapes and then you have to change the structure because it's an important rule, but I don't think that's an inclusion. I also think that there is a way in which standardized best practice and empirical operations process can be applied to new practices. I think there's a high degree of similarity across operations of communities, and that way it's overcoming the difficulties as well. Standardized processes, because it allows standardized skills, and allows skills transfer across municipalities. The framework which is created to be of standardization operations and in methodology should allow a free flow of skills across municipalities as well. Like I said, we don't believe that restructuring the issue right now is going to solve the issue. I admit the fact that some of the critical aspects of monitoring and compliance go with that. So I think when we talk about restructuring, we have to create the fundamental question: how do we agree where the power lies between measures and municipalities and constitutions and so on? Secondly, what is the future of the electricity, both supply and distribution? We cannot talk about the restructuring of the EEI when we're still in the process of discussing the restructuring of for example, the ISMO, or the transmission network. We can't be sure about where we're going if we don't agree on what the picture is that we're heading towards. So I think the issue of what the future looks like for both supply and demand is critically important. And I think that a lot of problems can be addressed without undertaking significant, I suppose, expensive and then time-consuming restructuring, we don't solve it. The very issues that we discussed. I think if you look at the approach, I think the crucial thing is getting the alignment of the stakeholders. And I think this portfolio hearing is the first step that we all care about what the issues are. And I think everyone has recognition of the existing structures and the importance of EDI both to the economy and jobs is crucially important. And I don't think we can separate out the issue of generation, transmission, and distribution. We can't just fix one and hope the others will follow. So I think it does require an integrated approach. I think the structure itself won't address problems. We have to look at compliance, we have to look at monitoring, and we have to look at support mechanisms as well. So we can't restructure and solve the problems. Yeah, I think that will never happen. And I think we need to make sure that whatever structure is proposed actually works within the current regulatory and constitutional framework. There's no use designing structures or restructuring them that aren't actually supported by those regulations. I think there are some issues that can be looked at to get some practice. The stakeholder alignment and preparation is important. So everyone's clear about where we're going and what needs to be done and who will do it. I think the issue of worksheets is sort of both stabilisation and evaluation of municipalities. So we can all agree that restructuring is not going to be a short process. But at the same time, we can't afford not to do anything right now. We have to stabilise the industry. And I think the stabilisation worksheet is crucial. And then the issue of capacity to those municipalities to be able to make sure that we don't use what we really have. And looking at ways use resources across the community. I think we also need to look at a number of frameworks. We look at particularly around the standardization issue, and this relates to how we leverage what we have. The issue of making sure that there is standard frameworks to address how revenues are used, how assets are managed, operational methodology, governance practices, and making sure that risk capacity building up. And I don't mean just only training programs with the municipalities. I mean, we need to look at ways in which there can be collaboration with the private sector. We have the majority of technical people to create mentorship programs with the municipalities. A lot of our members are doing this in an informal basis, and I think more formality we have so that we can actually provide mechanisms for creating capacity in the municipality. In conclusion, we don't see the benefit of simply restructuring. We think that systemic issues need to be addressed. I think those are the issues of capacity, standardization, and stabilization we can talk about restructuring. The second one is that the regulatory and constitutional framework has to support any restructuring that goes forward. But we can't know whether the constitutional regulatory framework actually does address that if we don't have a vision for what the industry itself will look like in the future. And I think that's crucial. We can't all walk around with building a house when we have a different view of what a house means in each of our heads, because I think we're going to catch. So just a book our stroke of what is the future for the industry looks like. It is a crucial step in making sure we're all towards the design process. They also need to look at leadership from government, like leadership from the regulator, and I think leadership from the industry itself is a crucial component to automation. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A distributor, a better election, or
indefinite or actually indefinite. Therefore, in this sense, electricity to be kept such a test form has a certain validity in the fact that it requires a distribution of taking license in order to take electricity. That is, the need for a license in order to perform a municipal service or to be a new service provider in the area of electricity distribution. That is, those are the terms that we find in the system. And I was going to come back to the Constitution, which is that I said, the Constitution gives local government power and control and the right to administer local government matters. This is in Part 8 of Chapter 4 and Part 4 of Chapter 5. And electricity regulation is listed as Part D of Chapter 4. I earlier on mentioned the amendment to the Act of the Limited. The intention was to ensure that the terminology in the Constitution of electricity regulation is then captured in the Act that regulates the system. Now, in terms of system effect, any municipality that has been given authority over a function can then decide how to deliver that particular function, which institution must deliver that particular function. It may decide to use its own department as many municipalities are doing. It may decide to have a business unit, some municipalities are doing. It may otherwise decide to go what is called external mechanism, by entering into service delivery agreement with, for example, another municipality or a municipality or an organ of data licensed to provide service, in this case, as a group of ERCOM, or a community-based organization, or any other institution of a technical competence reform. Therefore, the Systems Act differentiates between the service authority, which is acquired by a law to municipality, and the service provider, which then you can decide upon where that comes in, the municipality is not getting any income from that. that is this is the way I think it all. Isn't that kind of not sure? That's always been an mechanism that provides often a value of service. You have to be one of them. Much is very expensive, that's why that cruel decision to be a doctor. And also then comes to provide a much better incentive for our community in the patient. In the case of the delivery sector, we think that the use of the electricity is very probably in a much greater part of the FDA. And secondly, the mass intimidation of the infrastructure that provided for Indian public health fiscal public health impact, which has never been mitigated, and last in the infrastructure to be any kind of expansion for electricity for French economies. How do you achieve this? We think that it needs all of the parliament to show that NERSA made concluding of FTA in France to economies a license on ship. And the economy of electricity as a means of credit control in those FTA could one way for our opportunity. The second one is that to achieve what is in that means oversight element could show credit that the Minister of Finance prescribes the commercial admission and modern standards for important member of the charity as required in terms of the Act that we mentioned in order to enable municipalities to transparently be able to collect the charges and to don't have the kind of assessment that we see or that we hear from the appeal that the charges are not being taken into account. We need to have the even better that provides for that, but it can never be really explained. The second area of duality of regulation is in terms of the type and kind of regulation. NERSA is empowered to make any license decision to be subject to a number of conditions, and those conditions could include the conditions making to NERSA setting and approving types of charges, and so on, if provided in the Act for NERSA to be able to do that. On the other hand, the new part of NERSA management refers to setting of types of charges in general by any of the types, which therefore again means that we on one hand have an imperative responsibility for setting charges, and then we have the hand of the sector in the sector. They have never been the one before human carriers. That's generally what we call the other area of overlap in provision of electricity, in the provision of the electricity regulation act and the provision of the Minister of Finance Management Act, if you're ready to develop the infrastructure. Because both of these acts deal with imposition tariffs. While the electricity regulation act is typically charged by its licenses, but municipalities are dealing with generally with municipal tariffs, both of them in the respect of the electricity sector lead to duality in the local regulation. Now, how do we deal with this? As such, we think the approach is to use an interpretation that instead of rather inactivating the legislation in a way that actually supports the plan regulation or the we would choose an interpretation that you could want to hold. But then it means a very careful balance and acting on the action that we would want then is to accept that method determines the tariff, while we invite on the other hand set the tariff. It might sound like that's the word, but essentially it means that you allow a process in which method says, having considered that person in society, so that's a very clear thing there. This is the tariff that you invite him up. And then the infrastructure is properly as required by environment management and the system could happen and lay that particular in this situation, in fact, we stress on living a character which that tariff which was determined by the answer, but what we need to be trying and achieve in this particular situation. But this was really possible. The NERSA process should be organized in such a way that NERSA can target that not undermine the financial stability of municipalities. Currently, the arguments in municipalities that do not use it, and as a consequence, municipalities then use their legislative authority to move a tariff that do not undermine their financial stability, and therefore conflict with the tariffing of NERSA. Second, that the timing of the process of determination is done in such a way that it allows municipalities to comply with the value of the situation. Currently, the timing tends not to allow the decision by NERSA can be taken much later therefore means that time is expected to be one of the causes of civilization and has been required by the So that is not going to be the case. What then are the communities that fundamentals of these oversights must ensure that natural progress as high as it is identified by the progress society. And then that the types of determination are informed by unified financial liability considerations and are differentiated according to the consequences of the reaction by the government. Currently, we're trying to conform to a standard guideline that they will choose for unified. Whether a community is a family or you are a family policy, Now, on the electricity distribution industry, we want to start with the point that the industry is dysfunctional. I think we have become so negative sometimes in our analysis of the industry that someone would not think for example would assume that it was within GFA all of us came with an alternative plan in case of in the fact. And that is not the case. We all came here assuming that the switch on and switch how we go on and use the provider for the rest of what we need to do. That is what usually happens in households in our communities as well. There is an overwhelming preoccupation by communities for use of electricity that electricity will go on. There is some level of functionality that is there. However, with that though, we do recognize that there are serious problems that affect the some of them result because of high inefficiency of the documentation of the things that are affected on time of the country. That is the case. Inability to deliver the economic state, inefficient treatment of consumers, and so on. All of these, I think, members of parliament, members of the economy, they are aware of. I don't want to spend a lot of time appreciating all of this. I mean, that's when the things that look like basically are indicating what we see as challenges in this otherwise dysfunctional institution that we are trying to engage to outperform, trying to get undermined by the people involved in terms of vacancy rate, in terms of people in the sector. Then this can then get to be exacerbated by current electricity crisis and treatment in the country, which we talk about in the data. And the negative effect of climate change. And all of these things are things that we do not stand for. But the question is why? Why do we have all of this? We want to suggest as well that you could categorize the four of the problems in the main three. One is the factor, the condition of infrastructure and level of access to services, and when we established a municipality that became a key role player in the execution industry. The second one is what we all have from our administration structure of the industry, which is why in the first place would at some point talk about the construction of the industry. Those things mean that despite the fact that the solution that was proposed then seems not to be a welcome solution. But the challenge is in the fact that these are problems still remain and these problems still continue to remain. Those are really the questions of Africa that the democratic government has to deal with. The other one, probably the creation of movement for regime, which is the regime that is put in place as the democratic government, is the regime of the digital framework of local government that creates municipalities that are so dependent on electricity. That if you need electricity, the capacity in terms of cost optimization, the figures of the cost of the just within the industry, the poor who use electricity, but then over and above that, they have to consider the other functions that are involved in the problem, even the design of the framework of planning of water. So So I'm curious of that. We like to see impacting continuous on the electricity distribution network, which means by IAQ European. Then the country of the environment in the threat of patent policy and first development. In the threat of patent policy, the municipalities or leaders of the municipalities are going to ask, look, we as a country have a philosophy that the crisis for basic services that are provided by municipalities must be funded almost entirely, almost entirely from tariffs. Where, for example, in the case of electricity, we have a shareholder that is the national government. The national government is a shareholder that indicates the benefit of the surplus is coming from the industry. We rarely see the national government as a shareholder, as it doesn't happen in any business, is putting its own equity into the industry. That results in high value, which does not really affect the people. Increasingly, it is affecting the basic income of those that industry pays. It's affecting the economy that the industry pays. Consequently, you see the valuing of the municipality in respect of electricity. Because the consumers that otherwise should have been paying are not able to pay anymore because of the environment. Then finally, they are saying, we need to rethink the philosophy of time of electricity. And the second one in the economy is the zero development. While as a country we've been working across the board with skills development, it manifests itself already in the electricity distribution industry, which is all technical in nature and which requires even our technical, we have at the same time also require high managerial skills and to work in order to provide the industry. I think when we talk about this, we need to recognize that as a country, the competence for skills development lies in nature. But because we are at that level, we are not able to produce the kind of things the country has required, then you find the expertise in the municipality. And we, all of us, the platform municipalities, in the case of water, water, and so on, we all recognize that there is a need for us to cooperate to solve the climate challenge. The problem is with nature as well. There is a major attempt that I know that the members of parliament are familiar with in the aspect of trying to solve the problem. I'm not going to go into the details of the major attempts that we did, including the resolution of the implementation of ICT. Unfortunately, so far, none of those major attempts have very well in respect of including the rest is not the solve the problem that we have. And then again, the certain media that I in the process of typing also seems to have comments about CK. Over and above that, there is an issue now of increasing that. And it's quite linked to pricing. Because it's a public domain, I won't mention the name of it, but one biggest municipality in the country would get reports that increasingly business in the municipality are running or operating on the basis of fuel energy. They basically connect themselves into the economy. They reach the cars and so on. In order to continue to have a fuel industry, that particular city is basically an operating economy on the basis of this particular. And it does lead to other energy, that leads to climate. There are initiatives again that are then there is an issue of electrification as another element which we discussed in the last meeting. I think in some presentation that we made, I want to move on and inform you of time about what is needed. What then are the community aspects? We think that the partnership will be a process of developing an alternative approach to what we have to resolve the structural issues with electrification. We are of the view that there are some inherent structural and cultural and need a solution. Unfortunately, the solution that we have in the form of which is what I'm going to run back to the whole country, meant that you can either have less as viable and vice versa. keep the electricity distribution in that survival area when the human can survive in the context of the world's problem. We have not simply established the carbon neutrality in that context. I don't think we expect what's going to come to solution. And we're going to get as well. We need to do that work and we need to have learned from the carbon. But a solution that assumes that you can do this in a situation where you have a minorization in the world, there are consequences that cannot be but at the same time, a solution that we can solve the problem by ensuring the value of the world and the expense of this new thing that we can establish. We have a field one and doesn't solve the problem every time. So now we need to apply our mind and try and find a better solution. Then we think that there's a need to continue working with that, to continue with what was conceptualized by the algorithm in terms of publishing the infrastructure. But at the same time, we need to address the challenge of the construction of the law beyond that and the funding of that beyond that. We think that NASA should review the critical design and regulation of ICT. With the end result of having more vitamin and yet cross-water infrastructure. Currently, we seem to be doing cross-water and with the non-developed variety of those characters. We need to have a coordinated participation of municipalities in that they're coming, what is coming in the region. On our side, we want to commit to coordinated support to municipalities to end and support the actions in the territory with them and to build the island and more human energy. Last feature is in the area of the navigation system. In the next slide, we'll simply outline what we call the historical context that we see in the first of the day of the construction. We think the navigation of the old construction, which comes as a principle of the historical context that we outline here and we outline in this slide, which are double in that should not and cannot be left to municipalities. It's a historical inheritance of the country that we should collectively as a country respond to. The second one is the issue of lack of data in the state of infrastructure. It's only to be a problem for nature. Then what then do we recommend the society? We think that the funding that we do somewhere in the project, there is a need for an establishment of a national infrastructure approach in the past, a part of which will be funded. Because we know the ministry that we were mentioning in the past year of 2017, we now in the present state of cap on the electricity alone, which is why I think that this is not something that we can afford to give to the project alone, if you don't have the challenge that the economy needs to respond to. So we need to develop this kind of fund. And this fund should be used to give a credit to the pandemic. There are ways in which we can do that. The second one is the establishment of the GIAP, and National Program to Collect Data and Manage Information on an ongoing basis. This is a project that we know what we're dealing with and on an ongoing basis.
Honorable Chairman, honorable members of the Portfolio, good morning. And right at the top, I'd like to express our appreciation for affording the Chamber of Mines this opportunity to express our views on the electricity distribution industry. The delegation here this morning is Mr. Ian Morrison, the Chairman of the Committee of Mechanical and Electrical Engineers, and myself. I think some of the members know me already. And I'd just like to start off by saying who we are, where we come from, and what our interest is. The Chamber of Mines of South Africa is a voluntary membership Mining Industry Employers Organization. It was founded in 1889. It represents about 90% of the South African mining industry in terms of labor, production, and turnover. And I must say, our members range from the very large multinationals like BHP Billiton in South Africa, Anglo American, Exxon, right down to members of associations of diamond dealers, agro-land producers, and playbook manufacturers. So we do not represent only the large, largest of the large. Electricity in the mining industry is a vitally important input, especially for safety and health applications. In the large underground gold and platinum and diamond mine, it's used for ventilation, air cooling, the pumping of water, and getting the personnel in and out of the mine. That will represent about 55 to 60% of the demand in a large gold mine. The ventilation and the air cooling is absolutely vital. Where the gold mines are currently sitting between 3,500 and 4,000 meters underground, the virgin rock temperature is over 50 degrees C. If you do not cool down, the human being cannot live in that atmosphere for longer than a few minutes. In coal mines, the ventilation is equally important because our mines are gases, so flammable gas collects if you do not have ventilation. That means if you have a power outage of 10 minutes, you evacuate the mine and it takes a full 8-hour shift to get back in. Of course, you have to ventilate, re-ventilate each pipe, each vest, and do that to get in safely. And people sometimes think that the small mines, let me use an example, the little quiet crusher next to your critical power on down. That guy has an outage of electricity. Somebody has to climb into the crusher to get rock out. That's a lot of hazardous operation. So that doesn't underscore the importance of electricity from a point of safety and health, of course. And I think that to summarize that, we need a reliable, high-quality electricity supply for safe mining operations. Now, mining takes up about 40% of the electricity sold in South Africa directly. And as the colleague from EIUG said, once you add in the secondary industries, now we include industries that are not mining or mineral-related, but mineral-related, but they're not there anything. Currently, as of 2011, this is taken from Econ statistics, 1,110 mining customers produce about 32,630 gigawatt hours. That is 15.5% of South African sales. And the revenue was to Eskom at that point 12,979 million rand. At the same time, mining industry is a major supplier to the electricity supply industry. Last year, the coal mines produced 135 million ton coal for Eskom, and Eskom burned about just less than that. We want to consider the state of the electricity distribution industry, and here I am, qualifying. Most of the large mining operations get electricity from Eskom distributors, but the small operations that I've described earlier are municipal customers. So we have an interest in the total system. Most of the distributors are municipal. The whole industry is fragmented. We have numerous disparate tariffs. Some of these tariffs exceed the cost of supply vastly. And we get the feeling that many municipalities see electricity sales merely as a revenue raising mechanism. There have also been over the years insufficient investment in assets and maintenance and staff in the electricity distribution industry. The result is tariffs that exceed the cost of supply by orders of magnitude. Maintenance of the systems and expansion to provide greater services lacking. A poor quality of supply. Many of our smaller members who are dependent on municipal supply complain endlessly about outages. And we know these outages are in the distribution system, not in the major supply system or of generation. There's still a lack of progress in electrification. Electrification by this time should have reached levels of 99.5 to 100%. There should be very, very few people with that great electricity. Yeah, it's not there. The Chamber participates in a number of consultative processes regarding restructuring of the electricity distribution industry. And I recall we started off, I think, in 1992 in the National Electrification Forum. That forum submitted its report to Parliament and the Minister in 1994 and conclusions were restructured the industry into a number of independent regional services, ring-fenced electricity, and with money made by electricity, saved electricity, does not get used for anything else. That was reiterated in the ERIC process of the late 1990s, and eventually in the process that culminated in the Blueprint Report of 2001, it finally crystallized in the proposal for 6 independent regional electricity distributors, with large customers having a choice of supplier, and that specifically applied to those people using more than 100 gigawatt hours on a single point of supply or site per annum. And those would be the guys who take electricity at voltages of higher than 6,600 volts up to 60,000 volts. And their only alternative would have been Eskom. And Eskom may prove it was calling me to accommodate them. So that proposal was supported fully and publicly by the Chamber of Mines because it saw it as a solution to a problem. At present, we do not presume to have a position on the structure of the future electricity distribution industry. I think it would be very presumptuous for us to try and recite the alliance of all. But what we do have, we formulated a number of criteria that we regard as essential for a successful and efficient electricity distribution industry. We see any entity that is the distributor of electricity to be a publicly owned, independent entity governed in accordance with the Companies Act of 2008. We just do not see the mix of government and electricity supply work. It does not. It should be fully regulated by the National Energy Regulator of South Africa in terms of the Electricity Regulation Act. And I think that is a very important point. You heard just the previous speaker mentioned that you had these and two sets of legislation giving different rights and different obligations. It must be managed professionally. I think that was also alluded to by previous speakers. Electricity distribution is a business, and secondly, it's a very technical business. You need the appropriate skill staff to do that properly. It must be financially viable and sustainable. In other words, I think the first thing is the electricity price must reflect the cost of supply and also reflect the cost of maintenance, refurbishment and reinvestment in capital. Any profit, and I use the word profit advisedly, it should be excess revenue, must be used to maintain and extend the electricity distribution industry, the electricity distribution infrastructure, first before it's applied to anything else. The backlog in maintenance is so great, one cannot expect to use this money for anything else until that backlog has been settled. An electricity distribution entity should also be responsible and be held responsible to provide a reliable supply of electricity at an acceptable quality of supply. There are standards that have been developed, I think NI 048 is one of them, my colleague can repeat me. The currency, especially if you go down to the smaller supply levels, you find voltage dips, you find frequency variations, and sometimes you get equipment damage due to that. Such an entity must also undertake the necessary electrification in its area of operations, and it must be held responsible for that. It must also implement equitable electricity tariffs, and that is part of NERSA's regulation. There should not be willy-nilly deviation from NERSA regulations. We'd like to recommend and 30 years in Texas. So the great concern about the future of the electricity distribution industry, and especially the uncertainty. This is a result of insufficient investment in new distribution infrastructure and the maintenance of existing infrastructure. And here, one must be reasonable. We cannot blame any distributor for not investing in something that that distributor does not know whether he or she is still going to own it next year or the year after. That is from human nature. We therefore recommend that government decides urgently on a sustainable model for the electricity distribution industry. And that must be implemented by way of legislation. Now, I think that is possibly the crux of the matter. That all involves the Constitution, the way it's written into law, and the legislation. But once again, Chairperson, this is a very urgent matter. We are losing investment, not only in the electricity distribution infrastructure, but also in our industry, the mining and minerals industry. And so everything reliant on electricity because of the future uncertainty. Thank you very much.
There you go. Members of the committee, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for the opportunity to present the new perspective, one on the technology, but also the potential way forward for the industry. I'm briefly going to touch on the historic context, the supply industry, some views around that, some of the challenges and opportunities that we do have, a little bit of the industry evolution, because I think the end of the day, we are living in a real world, and I think we need to be cognizant of that. Considering technology as an enabler, how can we use technology and then approach way forward? And I think over the last 3 days, we've heard many concerns, but I think we've also heard quite a number of recommendations in terms of way forward. And perhaps if there's something in the cheek, you will notice that I'm wearing a black eye today, and it's not because it fits with my shirt. I'm of the opinion if we do not address this time around the issue, we're going to mourn the dying of the industry. And I don't know who's going to take the blame for that. I think if a person looks at the history behind our industry, since the 90s, we had a lot of debate around the generation. We're now in the process where we're sorting a large percentage of this out. I think we've got to the point that the average age of the asset is now 45 to 50 years, and we can debate whether 5 years this way or that way is that important. But the important thing that we have to remember is if you look well after the asset, it can serve between 50 and 60 and 70 years. We had people making reference to plant and equipment in service for 75 years, or since sorry, since 1957. But I think it gives an indication that it can serve you for a long time. I think during 1998, we developed the Energy White Paper, which gave very clear direction in what we had to do. 2001, we developed the EI restructuring blueprint. 2003, we had a cabinet resolution in terms of a way forward, which created a vision. And then came 2008, and we had a room awakening and a wake-up call, and all of a sudden, we did a lot of things. Now, if a person does a very simple comparison between the 98 objectives, as indicated by the Energy White Paper, and the 2001 blueprint objectives, you will find that there's a lot of correlation without us going into the detail of it, because I think we have debated it over the past 3 days. But what one needs to then ask the question is, what happened since the late 90s? Have we done anything? Well, since 2008, we made a significant focus on the generation, as I've indicated already. I think we made some good progress in terms of what should be the renewable profile and start to solicit bids in that area, so I need to salute that. I think we've got a better understanding of the challenges around the asset management, and I agree with many of the speakers that one can do some refining around that. I think in 2010 we decided the media reform process should be stopped, and one can have a lot of discussion and a couple of things on that topic, whether good or bad. The number of good performing distribution entities are decreasing. That's a fact. We can decide on whatever the barometer you want to use it, that is factual. The increase in service delivery challenges, that's on the increase. The EDI infrastructure backlog, we've discussed that. It is real. We're going to make the number. And then the interesting thing, the 2014 Education Universal Access. I can recall a discussion where 2012 was the year of universal access. I submitted a committee to say 2014, you better think out another excuse, because there will not be universal access. I think your infrastructure that needs to support, the backbone that needs to support what you connect onto the company, you won't be able to do it. Limited progress towards telecommunization, I think you've heard that. And then EIS financial health is under pressure, a point that I'm going to come back to. So I did a little bit what I call a scorecard. And I think if you start trying to summarize these things and you look at financial viable distributors, I question how viable the distributors are. Yes, there are some that are viable, and I grant that. But if you look at the total number of distributors in the country, I don't think you can get a smiling face. The rationalization and competitive tariffs, I don't think you can get a smiling face. Efficient provision of services, the only one that sort of can give you a smiling face is the cross-pollination of these practices. It is a level of attempt, and there's some work happening in that area, but I'm not sure whether that place is grinning or smiling. And then the continued rollout of new education schemes, yet it is continuing and it's taking place. So the slide I started off on Tuesday, just as a reminder, and I'm going to go through all of the points on it, I think it still remains the reality of the industry that we have been running today, and I think of the 3 days we just confirmed this picture. But I would like to remind you, in 2008, this was a statement that came from the media, the national emergency represented by the current power outage poses the challenge and presents the opportunity to the entirety of our nation to give concrete expression to the call we have just made for all of us to unite in action and act in unity to keep our country on course. That was now from the power radio perspective. Now, I wonder if we need another situation like this, and another statement like this, and then we're going to do something about it. So if a person then looks at the challenges and the opportunities that they've got amongst others, the following challenges dominate the agenda: the grid reliability, the cost price of electricity, the resources, the skills to effectively operate this business, the funding requirements, and you can continue with that list. So addressing the infrastructure backlog for them will not necessarily result in a more effective and efficient industry. The backlog is not going to address things like the cost price of electricity, the resources and skills, etc. The current EDI operating model, I therefore submit, urgently need to be revised or put on the transformation path or put into intensive care or do something about it, but it is not serving the best interest of the industry or the country at this point. The future revenue sustainability in the EDI is going to come from other offerings. I don't believe we can continue just looking at the kilowatt hour total. I think that is how you're going to dominate and keep this business alive. I think we need to look at things around that. The clever design scientist, we can't solve problems by using the same kind of thinking we used when we created it. So the question then is, what do we do? If a person looks simplistically at this graph, so the green line suggesting the environmental change, and things that's happening around us, and what happened to this industry, we saw over the years sort of a step change, and we sort of trying to stay abreast of what is happening. For the last couple of years, and definitely since 2010, we had a fair amount of flux in this industry. Now, either we're going to go one or two ways. One, we are going to see a further decline, or we take a step change, and this is where I need to salute the PC on energy for taking this intervention, and hopefully this is going to be a step change to bring us back on track so that we can accumulate this change which takes us where we want to be in the industry. I think at this point in time, we still have a tendency to apply the first with that sort of persistence, conditional ability. We will tell you exactly what you want, and you will do it according to our rules. But I think it is important that we need to move to an industry where there is greater participation by the customers and everybody in the industry to map out and shape the future where we want to be. So if a person then look at it from a technology perspective, the view that we've got in Sanetti is that there is a major opportunity now to do investment. There is no debate that we are going to invest in this infrastructure, and we have to invest in the infrastructure. Because in this as well, invest in infrastructure that is smarter and help us to leverage technology that we are not over-dependent on historical ways of doing it. I think yesterday one of the presenters presented a very, very simplistic way of how a mobile phone can be used to be more efficient and effective and take a lot of cost out of your business. I think this is the type of initiative that one needs to, and it's only but one example. So we foresee that in terms of equipment manufacturing, custom systems, advanced metering, medical distribution systems, there are many, many investment decisions that we must take at this point in time. We can just rather well make it smarter and facilitate the transformation in the respect of the customer empowerment as well as the advanced grid functionality. I find it amazing that at this time and age we're living in, that we have very, very little view in terms of the end customer or even the customer's network. I will challenge most of the utilities today to say, I stand by my numbers and I know how many customers I've got and I can account for each and every one of them on the grid. Now, if you run any type of business, you will be able to account. And I don't think it's or suggest it's simple. I've been in this industry for many, many years. It is not simple. But I think these are the type of things that we have to get right. That will result in job creation. That will result in reducing the peak and low demand. It will increase our operational efficiency. It will improve our reliability. And I think, therefore, that there is a case to be made about why we have to consider bringing more technology than keeping to the traditional way. It is important that we effectively manage that change. But what is important is we've raised the number of funds already. We need to create a vision so that we know where we want to go. We need to then, on the other hand, create an understanding for that vision so that there's buy-in into that vision. We need to communicate and we need to debate. And again, I think the 3 days now is an excellent platform to communicate and debate this industry and get alignment. I think we must stop this debate on whether it's 10 rand or 20 rand and get to the principles behind it. We need to understand the value proposition. What is the value that this industry is adding and how are we going to leverage it, but also then going with that motivate that we all understand it. We need to plan properly, we need to deploy the resources more effectively. That's the only way in which we're going to achieve the ultimate result that we're looking for. I think the whole question of performance feedback it remains, and I noticed that the chair raised a number of times the question of data and data quality and the availability of it. It is impossible to measure performance if you don't know where you are. It's impossible if you do not have data to tell you what's happening in the business and then to talk about performance. How do you measure whether you're improving or not improving? We need to then leverage lessons learned as we heard a number of good lessons in learning the industry already over the past 3 days. The question is to what extent do we implement the best practices and communicate this to the rest of the industry. I think we need to look at the case studies that we've got available and pursue that. We don't have to try the whole world to go and understand it. There's a lot of knowledge in the country that we can leverage and do corrective action so that we run more efficiently and effectively. And we need to modify our plan so that we can get continuous improvement and achieve the vision that will ultimately give us the success that we require. So there is a whole new opportunity that's come into view. And the Philippines become the lifeblood of the South African or, for that matter, any economy in the world. If you don't have it, you can't grow the economy. But I think what is also important that we have to know, there is an evolution in this industry. Most of the entities throughout the world started off as an integrated utility. And over the years, they moved towards the unbundling. Now, I don't think I have to convince anybody that change is not comfortable. And therefore, there is this view of resist the evolution and reverse the change, and you can change the industry after our conversation. But if that's going to be our attitude, we'll never change the industry. Or we need to decide and say, this is a your conviction, and we start the new industry to get it sorted out. But we can't resist the reality of the evolution that this business is changing. Now, if a person look at this diagram, then it simply indicates that in the past we had a level of intelligence in this earth. Let us not create the impression there is an intelligence in the earth. There is intelligence. Presently, we've got a fair amount of intelligence if you talk about the hierarchic system. But if you come to the encounters, there's literally any intelligence. I'm talking about grid intelligence. I'm not talking about the people operating the industry or working in the industry. I'm talking about the grid intelligence. I fail to understand why is it that the customer not going to tell you that I will talk? Because if you put proper sensors in the meter, you can get a signal that they are off. We can deploy people much closer to the product than where the fault is, because it's still needed. There are a lot of things that we can do in the industry, and this is how we feel that we say, while we have to invest now, let us look how can we leverage the technology, because for in most of the cases, we can actually factor it into the design, and with limited additional cost, we can have the benefits and be much smarter as we go into the future. And that will be, I think, the ability that the generation can effectively speak to the transmission, can effectively speak to the distribution, can effectively speak to the customers, the operations, the service providers, and the market. And this is not new. It's happening in the rest of the world, and we do have some of our entities in South Africa today that have gone down the route. I think we just need a vision where we want to be with it, and we really capitalize on the opportunity. A previous speaker made reference to this morning already. Let us not go and stay with historical things only to change the 10 years from now because we've missed the boat. There's got a significant opportunity at this point in time. And that implies that we're in another picture format, that we will have a smart grid network as we'd like to refer to it, and it is not gadgets. It's really making sure we're more efficient in the sector and can bring some of your costs down without taking jobs and opportunities away. But a proper interface between home distribution, transmission, and generation of the various subcomponents, as well as the independent system operator, regulator, the energy services in the financial market. Chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I submit to you, the regulator will never ever be able to regulate if they can't get the rivals they pay out of the industry. And as long as you're dependent on me to send you the data that I would like to send you, you cannot regulate. You cannot make the performance. So it's very simple thing. Now I think we can improve significantly. So there is a case for grid modernization. If a person looked at the latest report that was produced by Global Smart Grid Federation, the 2012 report, it demonstrates and gives you case studies, real cases, of a reduction in energy usage between 1.5% and 15%. A grid is shaving between 5% and 8%. But if you actually run to every breaker, if you look at the breaker when you're under pressure of load shedding, you'll never get it right. So there is a level of intelligence that we need there. Prohibition of greenhouse gas reduction, clear example of how you can get in there. So we are saying the bottom line, meeting the 21st century requirements from a grid perspective, you will have to get smarter. And we do not suggest that you try and fix everything on every network. We suggest that we go for a phased approach, you select what you require and what you can best leverage, and we have a minimum option, and we implement that. We are not suggesting a blanket, everybody must have all the elements in the top. You don't need that either. So if a person then starts looking at the way forward, I did a few observations, and some of this I made before the time, and some of it I've done for the last couple of days. I think there's a general acknowledgement that EV holdings is there. However, I think we've also confirmed that the challenges are all well in line and growing. Since the closure of EV holdings, I have not heard much of progress to a more or a better sustainable business. I think we need to salute those which are capitalized on, for example, ring fencing and moving forward. I think the City of Cape Town is a good example. We took the original benchmarking and the baseline alignment and capitalized on that, and make it clear that they benefit from it. I think we must salute the fact that there's a willingness to address the challenges. I've heard it very clearly. I've also seen over the last couple of days that folks are strong than us, and my interview with the than us if you want to have a consolidated way forward. I found it very interesting, the appeal for flexibility, but we must clarify what is meant by flexibility. If the flexibility implies I say as I am and you change, there is a very difficult flexibility to introduce. And I think we must be careful that that is not flexibility, That is the way that I run business. Like you all think like me, and that is very flexible. I don't think you can disturb us in any way. There are three distinct matters I believe that we've got at hand. The one is the infrastructure I've got. We need to deal with it. We need to deal with the current business and the maintenance that's associated with the current business. And then thirdly, we need a position for the future. Now if we're clear, we will do this in an integrated way, but what I was trying to suggest, there are basically a focus that we have to give to address these things. So the required reform or transformation will not take place without clear guidelines, accountabilities, and reporting. I cannot see that that will happen. I think some of the current policies that we've heard over the 3 days are a level of constraint, and one needs to address that if you want to go forward. I think the whole question of the supply area, IAS versus NEPA/Hospitality, is an issue that we have to deal with and find out what is the best optimal way of managing that. I think the ability of the regulator to effectively regulate is restricted for many factors and things outside their control, and one needs to ask how best can we deal with that. I think in general, I learned that there's a force for the approach to distribution asset management, and that is something that was established in 2008. There are very few people, if any, that doubt that they will embrace this cycle. We are going to make significant asset investments over the next couple of years, and this is the opportunity to align for the 21st century. And it's clearly, in my mind, a difference between looking at the assets and looking after the assets. I hear many people in my own sector, I think they're looking at the assets, not after the action, I also hear a lot of blaming the restructuring process for the underinvestment in the effort. And I think it is questionable. With respect, I want to use an example. I travel in the country and I see many, many streets of photos. I see many, many buildings who are not maintained. And I'm not aware that any of them are up for sale. So I question whether we are really considering managing our assets, and it's a general statement. There are places, and I always will recognize it, we're doing an exceptional business, but if we are under control, and in the corner, we always find an excuse why are we there. And I think we need to get out of that mode. I think there are a few principles that we need to agree to and to try and sort out. I don't think we should engage on further analysis paralysis. We've got an issue then, we can debate the quantum, but let's get underneath it. We need to find solutions within the current constitutional framework. I do not think the appetite is there to go and change the constitution, and I think within that framework you have to do it. However, we need to evaluate the relevant legislation, policy, and regulatory framework to facilitate the EDI transformation. We need to understand what are the things that we have to have in place to facilitate that process and moving forward. The point that we made a number of times, I can only agree with it, we need to leverage all of the work and the experience and knowledge that we have in this industry to take us forward. I'm personally of the opinion that we need to limit the asset transfers and pursue solutions which will provide for effective asset management, revenue from activities in the strategy, and effective service delivery, and also compliance with the legal regulatory and government's compliance, but limit the necessity of transferring assets, and I'm of the opinion you can find work around that. But having said that, we also need to avoid cherry picking. We must remember, by consolidating customers or areas, it's not likely that you will increase the customer base of the lower income. And if you're going to allow cherry picking, then I will only take this group of customers because I can make money out of it, and I don't take that group of customers. You might end up in a situation where somebody needs to take all of the lost leaders. The chairman, ladies and gentlemen, I yet have to see by putting a lot of bankruptcies together that it makes a viable business. It's a reality, and you have to deal with it. So you need to understand the balance sheet that's ultimately going to support your strategy. Any kind of cross-subsidization should be transparent. It's my view that it will always be cross-subsidization. There's nowhere in the world that you will go where you will not find a level of cross-subsidization. But let us be transparent and let's all know what it is that we try to do. And I think then, bottom line, from a principal perspective, you need to identify who the people are and keep the individuals accountable. And accountability does not imply if I don't make it, that you transfer me and promote me to another job. We need to be keeping people accountable so that we can deal with it. I then try to package the presentation into what I believe are the areas that we need to address. From an infrastructure backlog perspective, I'm of the opinion that we can update the current ALARM plan, and we can implement it as the National Integrated EDI after turnaround strategy in the most appropriate entity to look after that should potentially be the Department of Energy to drive it. I think then development implements a national funding mechanism so that we know how do we fund this type of intervention, and National Treasury, the Department of Energy and NERSA, I think should be the party leading such a discussion to get that right. I think it's knowledge that the EI is not in a position, even if we give, and the point was made yesterday also, even if we give us 30 billion today, we do not have the capacity to execute. So perhaps it is a turnaround program over a 5 to 10 year period, but if we have to take up loans to deal with it, let us fund it over a 20 or 25 year period to make the burden less on the end customer. And we did some calculations when ALARM was developed. It indicated that there's probably a 1% tariff increase, and you can do it. So the numbers are there. But there are a number of funding options. We heard over the last 3 days of 7 or 8 billion rand that we have in the surface. You can take some of the surplus or slash balance sheet capability. You can go for loans. You can go for grants, and there is grants, there are grants available. You can look at the tariff, slash levy, and you can look at a combination of the above. We also need to keep in mind, and Eskom indicated that on Wednesday, that a large part of their contribution to the backlog they are picking up, and they are dealing with it. But we must remember there's some of that is receiving attention. So that's not looking for the full 35 billion, but there's 7 now. And I think we need, and that is why I say we need to go and update our number report so that we can properly account for what is exactly that we're capable now and who can hold the balance sheet supported and who really requires the support in this. I also believe that in this process we need to go and identify all of the capabilities that they're available so that we can deal with this and move forward with it, and amongst others, look at the institutions. Under the lady, I would just like to highlight one, we've established what we call the South African Smart Grid Initiative, which is representing the focus of the industry, looking after the technology option. So you don't have to go and raise another volume, but that's just one example of where you can move forward to. I think we must also remember that we need to implement ALARM parallel to the day-to-day activity. You can't stop doing the things that need to be done, and that is why the argument is that you need that to get the additional capacity to help. When we talk about the current version, some of the things, identify the metastration studies with the capacity and the financial ability. Who can operate as a sustainable business? That can operate as a sustainable business and provide support. Now, we'd like to stop at that sustainable business. If you find it difficult to pay, you pay your income account. By taking on more, you might have a challenge on your balance sheet. I think the other thing that we must remember, we heard the number, you can use 12. It's also on record, and it was stated in one of the presentations yesterday, we've got one of our 30 new meters, which heavily depends on support of the neighbor to keep them alive from an energy management perspective. So you don't have that entity. So we must be careful when you make statements like you've got 12 plus Eskom that can help, you do not have 12 that can help. The number is far less. But the financial ability, because we must remember there is a balance sheet behind such a business to support that support to others. You must make sure that is healthy and can be done. I think in identifying the legislation study to require support, and I think the next action is then really to be together. The measures and secondary discovery can support one another, and there's some region place, depot, or whatever we want to call the entity there, who can provide support and link these parties up. But I think it is important then that once you link them up, that you also enforce the principle of replenishing. You cannot keep on having a cost center and no accountability for revenue expenditure and understand in detail per one item what is it that I'm spending in this business. And the bigger your money, the bigger the problem if you can't track your revenue and your expenditure. I concur with the point that was made earlier already around the establishment of service delivery agreement. And it is essential that there is either a service level agreement or a service level agreement, but there must be a mechanism that can regulate this relationship. My views consider that we should enforce legal, regulatory and policy compliance. And that goes from legislation, reporting, investment, tariffs, whatever it is. So if you do not have that in place, and everybody can, when I like it, I comply, and when I don't like it, I don't comply. You can't have such a system. You need to consolidate and have one direction. And just in a picture form, and that would perhaps give you a little regional office, a metro, and there might be a number of area offices or municipal, some capacity, and a lot of smaller ones where you have to give support. This is a type of model that you can then pursue, and so you could have a metro that seems like a council building for the total metro area, and you could have one that's like for the metro area, and some neighboring municipalities. And this would be a model that one could pursue then to work from. In terms of positioning for the 21st century, I think what is important, we need to agree on a vision for the electric supply industry and the distribution industry. Most of us do have a GPS, but that thing is useless if it can't determine where you are now. Without knowing where you are now, you can't contact into the any direction. I think we can determine the direction and we need to confirm where are we now so that we understand that. And that brings me to the point of review and improve the EI data collection. I see many of the data collections, and what you collect and what you can use is not the same. You might have an 80% collection, but only a 10% use of what you have collected. I think it is essential, and we've heard it also, that we need to come to a standard approach and methodology in terms of accounting in the distribution industry. We have to sort out definitions. So that when you talk about refurbishment, we all speak about the same type of thing and not have different views. But we need to improve that data collection, get it more accurate, so that we can establish a baseline and from there define how do we go forward. We need to develop and implement the good technology applications. We need to be clear on what are the technologies that we want to pursue and how do we do it. We need to leverage technology to modernize the grid. Bring in the point that we've made. And I heard from the chair yesterday, he used the term, get smarter and reduce more with less. Fundamentally, what you can do is you get technology sort of out. And then set the target and drive energy efficiency and demand response, amongst other improved active communication. So these are the things that you then have to address going forward. But there are some generic things that we have to sort out. Review the regulatory framework, the powers to show that there is a sustainable ESI, and that we do not repeat the backlogs that we've got currently, and that we can move this industry forward. We need to revive all the particular training capabilities that we've got, and we know the resources team. We need to assign accountabilities and responsibilities. We need to establish EDI turnaround integration coordination mechanism. And with my suggestion would be that we get them to report the PTM energy. And I heard the argument of, don't create more committees. I don't think there is more committees, but we need to find coordination and integration mechanism. And you need to get the forcing back to the PC and energy so we can then measure and see how we're doing together and how we're going forward. So there are certain things that irrespective of what we have to do. One of the points that came up out of the earlier discussion, and I can only endorse it, and that's that we need to revisit the total tariff harmonization. We need to get the tariff harmonization sorted out because with what we see today, we simply cannot continue on that basis. The tariff harmonization has to be one of the things that must be on this list, and you need to deal effectively with the tariff harmonization. Trying to wrap up all the 2008 statements, the service of business unusual should apply to all individuals to carry the privilege of being public servants. I think we told them it should be business unusual because they want to get this business on track and move going forward. Chair, members of the panel, I thank you for the opportunity.
Thank you.
that, you know, the short term, as some of you have indicated, could remain sort of intensive. But why out, you know, that line may not be that intensive, but at least we are quite sensitive to what we need to do and what are the plans. First of all, I'd like to meet you the first time because I know it's going to go for a time pressure. And whoever else can follow.
Thank you, Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity to speak. I'll come to speak to you more of the financial implications because I know that my colleague will want to see the technical issues and legal things in it. Thank you very much for the open presentation this morning. I think yesterday I thought that you concluded and actually reinvented the wheel, but then I saw today that I believe that we went to another level. So perhaps the chair specifically said, you know, I think we don't have to reinvent the wheel. I think a lot of progress has been made. And the point that I'd like to make, if I know that it's a practical problem, and the practical problem needs to be somehow just being fixed, we need a vision and we need the implementation for that vision, and I think that's going to be able to deliver that to the fact. On the funding options, Honourable Chairperson, I want to just emphasise that my view and my reference is Dr. De Beer would be the combination of the both seems to me the great option. You know, in terms of funding, all more than any business, I own a few businesses, there's a lot of crop capitalisation, unfortunately, and we don't know how to get rid of the multi sort of in the business in terms of the loss of partners. But you need good departments to find the other more complex department. The tariff already, we had interesting proposals from Professor Everard, we went to 1% the distribution rate, and I think that is something that all of us have been visioning and discussing visually specifically, and see that we don't get the situation where we will have heavy tax changes and the overtax, and where we will have a revolution in terms of consumers not knowing when will they get imposing higher tariffs on us. So thank you very much for those presentations. The follow-up presentation was also very interesting to me, but before I go there, the catch-up presentation alluded to the fact the importance of the impact on local government finances, the importance of electricity cash flows, the importance of asset base for raising capital and loss again on the financing. I think it's very important to note how we do it. The credit rating is important, and the collection ratio, and many of the small ones that in terms of income and revenue, and the solvent and also health thing, we saw that it's an area which was totally neglected. And in many municipalities, my own municipality where I come from, the key state, for 2 years we never see an electricity account. And how can you fund in your expenses? And also as well aware of all the problems. So thanks for that, and I can give you a presentation in this regard. Father's presentation brought to you one thing to me in my mind, and that could be, we should agree to pay for what. And when we are overseas, overpriced in terms of the nuclear proposal, and when I spoke to the bonds, I think it's here, the distribution, component, they also have the same problem that they are testing that Mr. Plansky does need transactive capacity to do all the maintenance on the infrastructure backdrop, and they have a different methodology. And to be honest, they also spoke about levies from another level. You get the funding for the other responsibility. And I think that if you had taken my strategy in discussing with the Development Bank of South Africa, where they will become a finance mechanism where they will also have implementation agents to see how they can fund and do implementation for about 150 assortments, I think it's a step in the right direction. And I hope that the 30 that they did not have a presentation yet, because I wanted to ask them, but it's been proper coordination between Tolman and the DD and saying that could be my question. But we know that municipalities are dependent on electricity income, the funding of 1% levy we discussed, and the importance of the service delivery dialogue. It's very important. So the good news that I heard yesterday is that ESCOM, and I believe that the few things we saw regards to the municipalities in ESCOM, but yesterday ESCOM alluded to the fact that they will adopt municipalities. Smaller municipalities, I think that's also second in our motion, and we hope that we can do some progress in that regard. On the money presentation, thank you, sir, for your presentation. Just the capital expenditure. I hope that we all have consensus in terms of capital expenditure and choosing a longer term financing model in terms of loans and long term, not the right components and electricity users. thought would be very easy. Just a capital expenditure, that one. And then I think there was a proposal from the electricity intensive users, the bigger users of electricity. And my question would be to perhaps if you can address the discussion about your electricity and whether you find that it is a deep, unique customer, perhaps part of Texas. I know there's been contact in the past when we have a different scenario in terms of energy supply, but then there's a lack of energy supply, our reserve margins are very low. And we see in the press that we've talked about the government articles alluded to the fact that there is a lot of this open contract, especially with bigger use of energy in terms of special tariffs. And these are to be clustered on by other sectors. The small and medium enterprises, you've alluded to that fact, that they should be sustainable, of course, they should be, and crucial for the ability of a municipality, that the municipality should function effectively to sustain these businesses. So it's the core of job creation and economic growth, smaller businesses, smaller enterprises. And I just have the experience here, if you allow me, that I've alluded to the fact that fast start of these houses don't even put on the heaters anymore for their plants, because they can't afford the electricity. It's a different level of quality, I think. It's unfortunate that they will then withdraw from the country, they will leave it in other areas, and tourism is such an important proposition in the in-house business activities. Thank you, and then perhaps my last remark would say, funding, yes, I've spoken about long-term loans and equity, and I think we need to get together in terms of how you see the spending is taking place, because I think economic growth is an important issue for people to afford their electricity accounts. I think we have to bear that in mind before we do that. Thank you, Steve, for the opportunity, and thank you for being a pleasure to thank you for going to speak first, and for the excuse now back to that. Thank you so much.
the question of metering. I agree with Dr. sphere. I mean, I think that we have to certainly look at a vision for 21st century energy. And if it's can't just give us fixing the problems now and continuing with the old model. I mean, and I wanted to ask some specific questions around our current metering system. At the moment, would we be able to do net metering from a technical point of view in terms of the kinds of meters that could have in people's houses? Or do what needs to change on that front? What are the kinds of technical changes that we need to do to the network to allow for firstly two-way metering so that people can put certain lamps on their roof and sell back to the city? What do we also need to do to allow for kind of use metering? Because I think clearly we need to have a smarter grid and we need to be able to charge people differential rates for the kind of use, so encourage energy efficiency and also like, change their kind of use patterns. So what are those things that are needed to bring about that particular change on the grid? And then in terms of solar, we're saying that you know one of the problems that they have with Eskom controlling areas is that they can't use electricity as a grid control mechanism. But I mean, I'm a little bit alarmed by that particular statement. I mean, you know, I think that if somebody has to take a raise, the fact that electricity is not quite the way we should be using electricity as a form of credit control. You know, what is exactly meant by that in terms of credit control? Surely we should be able to utilize different sources in terms of where payments have to be made. Yeah, and I think I'll just leave it at that.
Thank you, Chairperson. I also want to agree that we've had a peak and I think it leads me to say that we are very fortunate in having the expertise of so many people in some trying to find a way forward, and I do thank you for your presentation. Let me just start first of all with the fiscal engagement before me. I want to just take up this issue about the informal settlement as everybody. And I think I need to say this because this is a public platform and I think if we don't get the thing right, let me to get the facts about the CEO and being responsible and looking out for that. I think the biggest thing in ethic reading is to deal with illegal connection. And that's been an ongoing thing. And I think we dealt yesterday with the fact that we're looking at the electrifying informal settlement, so they don't have to have illegal connection. But that is the one point. The other thing I would take up is the question of the tax, and there's been a lot said about this. And for very obvious reasons. I just want to understand, in the slide that we were shown with the differentiation of between 55 and 79% on smart jobs, now I know that municipalities argue and you know, for having the cost to be able to cross-subsidize. My question really is, how can we have such a huge difference between municipalities in the demand structure? Yes, let's have it, but you know, why is it, we're talking here between 25 and 700%. I mean, it's crazy. Now, I tried to read that slide. I couldn't read it. I need a magnifying glass, so I'm going to have to go and do just that. But perhaps when I see it on my computer, it might be a bit bigger. So that is just something that I would like to understand. And I think the whole idea of the transparency that has come across in a cross-subsidization, nobody likes cross-subsidization, and I think that's a fact of life today. But the transparency is extremely important. Thank you, Chair.
Norman Leslie for Complain Land, I have a point here. And all the equals are quite good. So much to learn the Mark IV. And at least Dr. Woody to be able to smile and photograph the view of interest and help. But you think of it, you know, there's a saying that as long as your children play, you don't mistake. Well, we have the children of the municipality and the residents. And because of lots of little kids bad timing in the park, and the impact on the residents, the residential consumers, it means a lot of hardship. And then when you look at savings at it, this is the largest case now that is the problem of having a lot of money to require. And that brings the fourth on to the consumer. Now, if you look at areas where people are speaking, it's something that they cannot help. But the majority of them say, I'm not paying. And you look at the new areas that are being built, and people are saying, okay, we have the houses of no water, there's no electricity. And it's been involved a lot of the services that we built there. Now, I don't know if it's fair that the consumer would pay for park mistakes by the relevant authorities. I haven't looked at the article, but I think it's impacting. You look at the places that they find that the number of houses are for sale in improving areas. And the very thing they say, cost of services, we can of course they tell it before it anymore. And that is a concern of mine, and I don't know how that where the answer could come from.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Very quick on my side. Okay. Once again, your input made the draft of special project be handled. That's one of the things that you don't have to do that to see the further value funding of the project block in the infrastructure. What other options to mend it are a variant that could end up with the relationship that then makes it to be more precise. What about the private sector? Do you think they should play a role in that? I'm glad that you do have created a number of challenges around certain specific areas that focus on the role of Parliament, which I was the head of the record, should be oversight. And of course, the application of cost participation as well, doing it's just one other area which should take up quite a lot of attention. Gracias.
policies now, but you're going to be important for this, not just taking or allowing input for the sake of allowing them, but it's like to get a more substance here and there. You may listen to properly the supply of the room, mind that depends on the fund. Just a point of cooperation from about in terms of power. If you can know about, I thought that a mind that gets all the power from that book. This would be a hindrance to that in the fund.
Chairman, I'll ask my colleague to respond to that one, please.
Not now.
Yeah, a number of plantations in Croatia, but
difficult experience, I think, to them.
But that has to see, you know, how, you know, what would be different, say, options, you know. That's what I understand. I think for now, the thought. Maybe I start to see what was in it.
Chair, Mr. President, thank you. I think the first question that I need to respond to is our question on the funding options. And in the proposal that we presented, the indication of there are a number of options and then considering a combination of the above. The view is that if you go for a combination of the above, you can tap into the potential surpluses that's in the base, but you can also tap into the potential donations. And in that way, you can make the burden on the end customer less. And that is why one expresses the view then that a combination might be the better option in it. I think there was a question asked later also in terms of who should pay for the mistakes of the cost. Well, whichever way one look at it, the customer pays for the mistake. You either pay it by your taxes and your paper goes into the picture, and you get your grant by the circuit, so the customer pays. Or you look for the levy and the customer pays. So that's the only way that you can really say, what are the reserves that's there? And you're tapping on the reserves because the reserves also come from what customers pay. And that is why I argue that you need to consider a hybrid of these options and don't go for the one size for all. But fundamentally what needs to go with it is one needs to look at the funding of the backlog, specific to that's what we referred to here. You need to go through the IMF type of process via DOE. I think there's a good example of how a funding mechanism currently works for electrification, and I say apply the same principle. In other words, you have look at plans, know what the plan is, and you can even then favor the funding directly in line with who is going to be the beneficiary of it at the end of the day. So you need to have that mechanism. There was also a question around the 1% levy on the transmission. During 2008, when the Avant study was done, we also did a financial calculation. And at that point in time, it suggested that in the order of a 1% tariff increase, we've gone a long way towards funding it. But then everybody in the country contributes to it, and it's not a question that this will be one specific area, because unfortunately, it is not as simple to say that customer base in the geographical area will generate sufficient by a levy to support the expenditure in that specific area. So again, you spread it over the several national base, all of the customers contribute, and yes, again, the level of cross-fertilization to the money might go, for example, into a secondary municipality or a rural area even, and not there you've created most of it. But again, it goes back to why I argue that you need to have in the IMET type of concept to manage that specifically. I think I've touched in on why the consumer must pay for the mistake. It's unfortunate, but that's the reality that's going to be inside us. The question was also asked in terms of the limitation on the asset transfer. During the EDI holding era and deriving for the model that we now know is not going to happen, a lot of time was spent on the transfer of the assets. How do you compensate and how do you account? Now, one of the complexities that you've got is there are very, very few reliable asset registers. Now, you can't really talk about compensation and buying and selling if you don't know what the asset is that you want to buy and sell. There's also a complication in terms of how much money must be spent on that asset to get it to the standard where it should be. Now, do I offset that on the price that I want to pay, or how do I deal with you? And that is why my view was, for this stabilization phase that you want to go through now, perhaps you should limit the transfer. I don't say do not do transfer. If the transfer is clear and you can do it, and entertain the transfer there. But we could perhaps consider a concept where you have an asset owner and an asset operator, i.e. the municipality that remains the asset owner of it. Responsibility to operate, refurbish and run goes to the new operator, and on transfer of that asset, we have an clear definition on how you compensate and pay. However, that proposal is a short-term proposal. In the medium to the long term, you must address the whole question of assets. Because ultimately, if you really want to transform the industry in a sustainable manner, you will have to consider asset transfers, and you have to make a stable of these ownership operator arrangements do have their complexities in it. So chairman can only serve as an interim measure, not transferring, but in the medium to the long term, you need to sort it out and you need to manage it. They have to transfer. I need to just for the record also indicate there is an asset transfer framework which is in place, which was drafted and approved by National Treasury, which was one of the fundamental reasons why they won't fail. Because we couldn't transfer the asset at that point in time because the asset transfer framework was not available to New Zealand. Today we have an asset transfer framework and you can transfer the asset. In terms of the ancillary services here, if you look at your fishery letters, there's a fair amount of communication cabling capability, if I use that term loosely. I'm just saying, if you look at what happened in this evolution in the rest of the world, many of those entities today sell data transfer capability. I think that's one way to ancillary service where you can make money. If you start leveraging it and not just using the infrastructure only for the services of that recruited business. But that's just one way. And therefore the view that we have is that in the same thing with the renewables, there are options around it that you can pursue. And one must not stay with the practical model. That is perhaps the bottom line message that I try to convey. Let us get out of this mindset that the recurring person can only make money by selling the kilowatt hours that it bought from the last supplier and sell it to the end customer. There are opportunities in our good models around that. In terms of the technology deployment and opportunity chain, I agree that we can put much more detailed documents on that because that is a subject on its own, but there are significant opportunities within that technology space that one can pursue for efficiency and effectiveness, and very much so for communicating with the customer both ways. First and talk about demand side management or demand response, then you need that type of thing. The last is general comment because of exactly the question around the finances. It is my view that one needs to, at some stage of it, either sooner than later, review the whole municipal funding model. That just hinging on the ability to generate money out of the sales of the currency is not a sustainable model. And very much as the industry needs to look at alternative revenue streams, one would have to look at new studies and say, what should be the funding model going forward? You can park it, we're not going to avoid that debate in the future. We have to address it head on. Because it hinges on all of the tariff discussions that we have across hospitalization, etc. And I don't think there's anybody that's denying the need of additional money into the municipality to make sure that we can get the basket of services. Thank you, Chair.
I suppose let that go down to that.
Chair, if I can pick up on the last point, which relates to the issue around surcharges. There was a question around cost-effective tariff subsidies and surcharges. What we would generally look at is, if you have got different categories of customers within the electricity service mix, there's a cost to provide or to supply to the customer, and there's a cost for a price which you're paying for their service. And the difference between the cost and price is the level of subsidy. Obviously, if we can cross-subsidize between these customer categories, that could then balance out. The surcharge is something which is used to subsidize our municipal services, but it should be looked at something in a completely different context. It is essentially a levy or a tax which the municipality is placing on electricity to generate a completely separate revenue stream. What that revenue stream is used for is not something which we should get into in this issue, within the debate about cost subsidization. So I think if we're talking about cross-subsidization, we're talking about cross-subsidization between customer categories within the distribution industry. The surcharge is now tax being levied on top of the electricity bill, which is used to provide an additional source of funding to the municipality. We did ask a question around cost-effective tariffs. The water services, solid waste, and electricity with all cost-effective tariffs. And the fact that the water bill is so much lower than the electricity bill is reflective of the different cost structures within the industrial industry. The question around consolidation, whether consolidation should be occurring, whether municipalities should be looking at taking over excess of find areas of white wisdom. I think that that is a bigger issue to be explored. I think part of the stumbling block when you're looking at those types of models to solve solutions is there are all sorts of issues that come up when you're looking at how to do that. Saying that that is something that needs to be looked at. A future model may not necessarily be a solution at this point in time, given the fact that various entities would like to change the cost. I'll give you my bank customers if I can make a good customer. So I think that that is something that you're saying, what should the industry be such in the future? Where should we go to? Definitely in terms of the things which is contained in the draft report from the National Planning Commission, that's the type of model that needs to be favored. As to who should be planning, what is the role of the National Planning Commission, I'm not quite sure, Chair, what the role is between the Department and the National Planning Commission, but I think that what we need to do is that there is not much flesh in the National Planning Commission report given to the distribution industry, and perhaps that is an area which they could focus on. Of course, not saying that the Department can play a role in terms of the there was also a question around net metering. Is it just the meters that are the constraints? I mean, there are a number of different constraints. Metering solutions, type of meters, what is available on the market, the cost of those meters is one of the issues. The other issues are about standards for connection, what are the technical standards that need to be put in place, particularly relating to issues around safety. And then also there's an area of tariffs, which were, I think, touched on it. Our time of use tariffs or other types of tariffs used, which is appropriate. Once again, are you ensure that the costs which are need to be recovered are to be recovered through the line of those different tariffs? The range of issues, the separate presentation for itself. Credit control, cutting off electricity for other municipal debt is of course one form of credit control, but there are other softer forms of credit control. Alerting customers to when they purchase electricity that they have got under municipal debt is a far softer option in terms of credit control. So I think there's a number of issues which can be addressed without going to the end stage of the cut, which I think is regulated in terms of legislation, in terms of process that needs to be followed for cut. But there are definitely advantages to using the softer methods in order to get people to come in and make a decision. Very often, the threat of a cut-off is far more effective than the cut. The question around how alternative technology can have a negative impact. What we're seeing is that the high-end consumer residential properties are having wanting to carry more and more of the burden of subsidizing the lower-end consumers, which means that alternative technology such as photovoltaic cells or solar heaters become quite effective options for those households. If they then implement those options, they do not buy electricity, so therefore they are not paying the high electricity price which is being used across subsidized. So the municipality or the entity can lose that ability to cross subsidize because the revenue from those consumers which are renewed to cross subsidize reduces. I think that's one of the challenges that we need to look at in terms of how the cross-subsidy framework within customers is put up. We don't have this negative consequence because of I think there are other reasons why we would want to see the introduction of the new technology. And then lastly, the customer mix between Eskom-wide, Eskom is such a large commercial and industrial component of the residential. Their customer mix, which is shown here, is based on energy, so it's not number of customers, it's in fact the energy used by the customers. And I think the important issue is that Eskom classifies municipalities as commercial and industrial customers, but inside that large 95% commercial and industrial, all your municipal residential customers are in fact energy. I think this would be very often to municipalities saying that their poor customers are cross-subsidizing the commercial customers because the municipality as a whole is considered to be a commercial.
follow on, so I'll deal with the chair's question first. And I think it relates to the tariff and how much of a burden do we want to put on to the electricity consumer as opposed to on the tax base for this backlog. So it's a different issue. It's not around the operational and the putting aside a certain amount going into the future, but it's the backlog. And I just wanted to highlight what Leslie has raised is, and maybe take it a little bit further, if we look at power at the moment, and then come back to some of the other electrification issues. If we look at power at the moment, if we look at the telephone bill, we pay a huge kind of service charge, and then a smaller amount for the amount of calls you make. And this is the model, I think, which the companies are bringing in. So that irrespective of whether you draw any electricity or not, you're paying this demand charge or network charge. And I think the risk is when you have wealthier customers putting solar panels on the roof and decreasing the revenue budget when I'm using any electricity, then there's a risk that the municipality is going to go, okay, well let's up the network charge so that we make sure we get a revenue anyway. And unfortunately I'm not the rather reactive and punitive way of going, and it's not kind of being innovative, how do we use the fact that we've got this new technology in order to solve our problem, but that's a whole other debate. So then really what it comes back to is, and I'm saying clearly maybe I'm meaning national departments that get their funding from the system, if you have things like electrification, you have things like infrastructure funds, that if you use those funds, you're the backlog, and simply because you're drawing on, I mean, I think eloquently, Sylvia said that the customer always pays, so if you're drawing on the employees, you're drawing on the businesses who are paying tax to fund this backlog, rather than drawing on the consumer base, which is people who are maybe unemployed and low income who are still paying for electricity. And remember, when you put electricity tariff up, it's not just electricity that goes up, everything goes up, so the cost of living becomes a burden on the poor. So that's the motivation for suggesting that it should not be a tariff-based approach, and that would also say that there's maybe a little bit of danger there, a risk. So for the backlog, we would motivate that in the same way water is a basic right, electricity is really a basic right in terms of driving the economy. If we don't have electricity, we don't get economic development, not all of them drive up. And so in that sense, it to me makes sense to start making treasuries. Just to look at the informed settlement, the clarity maybe I need to put in that urbanization is increasing and the number of informal settlements is increasing. And if we want to extend electrification, we have to deal with that sector. We have to electrify that sector. The illegal connections that I understand are a couple of different versions. The backlog dwellers are buying the electricity from the formal house owner. The formal house owner may not be paying the first of that electricity, and thus they might be bypassing the meter. And in fact, Eskom have told me that actually a lot of customers are actually happy to become formally connected by Eskom because their bills go down. So the illegal electricity sales and connections have all sorts of ramifications that way. But the issue needs to happen, and the point that I made earlier is that in our report, that in Equity, there is a push to actually electrify these informal settlements because we want to sit there and not electrify them, and that there's been a push back to say that this was concerned that they would be taking a liability because they want to electrify the effect on the head of electricity. Now I understand that Cape Town has got a way around it, and they have electrified the warm signals, they've involved people on the ground, it's much more participative process, and in that way, they've actually got no problem, which is a good part of that. But that is the issue, is that we can't just say we're only going to electrify formal housing. We have to take an informal business electrification approach, which has all sorts of ramifications, but I'll stop there.
Thank you very much, Tanner. Thank you, Jay. There was a particular question to me, I think, the issue of whether the
EIG is subsidized by various undertakers. And I think hopefully this will be the last time we get to ask the question. To come over as bad as you seem to persist. If your tariff is higher, that is the cost to supply, you are providing a subsidy. If you are paying a tariff lower than the cost to supply, you receive a subsidy. The fact that one pays 10 and the other a rand is immaterial. It's the related cost of supply. And all our members are significant contributors to the subsidization of other use. In other words, the tariffs we pay, irrespective of their level, are higher than the cost of supply, because invariably our members take straight up the transmission structure. So hopefully that we can just not take two tariff classes, one paying 1 rand and one paying 10 cents, and take care of one subsidy and the other to incur. So hopefully, Jay, this is the last time we're forced to answer this in your comments. The last point I'd just like to make is that the sense we get after a couple of these proposals, and this is my talk as Sean Mel residents of St. Joe, is that there seems to be the view that residency lives for the benefit of municipality. And I think that's just something that I'm very concerned about as an individual. Municipalities exist for the benefit of residents. And I don't think we can continue to teach residents in that just because our member from Cape Town said we should just add a levy to Cape Town's rate before Edmund's rate and we'll have equality of rate. In the same way that we make everyone sweat, and inequality in the country disappears. It just doesn't make sense. So, this is my simple comment.
Mr. Cook.
Thank you, Chair. I'll answer on behalf of the Chairman. My name is Ian Morrison. I think my colleague highlights the fact that mining is a hazardous occupation dependent on reliable, continuous electricity supply. Given that as a given, I think the comments around quality of supply, and particularly around non-electricity supply, is that they are generally feeding smaller members. They don't necessarily have technical expertise to maintain that supply to the degree that we would require. I was just to highlight for this committee. Quality of supply goes beyond frequency and voltage. It talks to dips, which causes plants to trip. It talks to unplanned outages, which bring many, many hazards. And it talks to planned outages, which don't come back on time. So while Eskom and the Enix suffer from the same problem, I think within Eskom there's a bigger awareness of mining needs, to the extent that Eskom customers actually hold a critical load register for all their customers. So in the event of a total power failure, Eskom actually knows what is the mine need to survive and not to lose life. The same is not true for Munich. And we're now working with the Munich to try and rectify that. So I think the comment around quality of supply is that Eskom has a better or a bigger technical base and are more aware of our needs. And it's something we need to share more or better with the Munich. I'm not sure that answers your question. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. The open to that was relevant. The third one is in relation to the discussion going on between the National Assembly and the Abbott Assembly and the Finance Minister. And whether or not involved, no one was involved. And the whole other was the National Assembly. The second one was the issue of between issues that are as an outcome of the consultation of the day and as well on the other issue for who you did the issue for. In fact, when there were discussions for what the establishing rate, the other part raised the qualification, part of what they must be having, part of the problem. Then the other part of the problem was leadership of the aid in all the municipalities that was having formed part of it. But then the problem was at that time, the conclusion, the version of the case was that the couple need to decide how much the session is. But at that time, there was already a whole conclusion that the mechanism would be arrested, and therefore, it was just a lot of good guidance for what's happening at the time of the power assets to arrest all the good appointed registrations provided. So they still, they continue to be, but in some cases, in some most of the universities, they're okay with current articles, but there are cases. Where some employees are saying that if you look at the criteria that the service table is in there, some decisions that are supposed to be applied in some of the employees do not simply suffer the criteria. Or in some other cases, decisions where the employees will be a supplier or a explain the institutional arrangement being considered. There are two other questions, Chair, that we probably could also respond to. One is the extent to which other services are charged a constant rate, a tariff or a price by the municipality, and whether we should not go in the direction of that all services such as water, waste management, are charged a constant rate, maybe tariff and report to them, and the extent to which whether they are being subsidized by the service. The third would be the fact that in the case of water, generally the revenue collected from water services and the cost of water services tends to be at the level of the rate, almost the budget, in many municipalities. But there are also many municipalities in which the cost of the plant and as well as high charge to the consumer is lower. The reason but if you increase the kind of such services and then that's to experience non-payment of federal services, we have very limited options in respect of reducing or provision of those services or having the provision of those services without arising in the context of public health risk. So therefore, when you look at the social market services that the universities are providing, and if this is understand a more and easier service in which you can control consumption depending on payment rather than the other, where if you are trying to control the provision of that service depending on payment, then you have other concerns than understand. So in that context, therefore, it becomes very difficult to push up the price of other researchers with collection improvement and water collection. But there is a scheme process towards getting to that in the process of those particular services. But avoiding the shock of this increasing significantly as it has happened in the case of the last question I thought maybe we want to add is all the is the use of electricity as a form of the form of trade control. Our study indicates that where you have a promise of land and not an instrumentality, we are kind of the situation where all other municipalities are capable. Because that is what there is no threat of a really vital option of candidates to that particular community. Even though in some cases just the mere existence of the threat to do that is enough, that they even that option at all for a municipality, then you can find that even though they have low level of payment for all aspects of the municipality compared to another township, that would have been, for example,
and also IFAA.
example, they'll be making inputs from the financial Otherwise, let us all have a weekend rest for those who will be able to, but unfortunately, many others feel that we will have a market duty. 5 and 7 left. The meeting depends on them.